Okay, Google.
Wait, that really works?
Okay, Google BBC my wife.
Let's find out.
No. No, BBC is not a good search. Not a good search. Lee's never done BBC as a search, you can tell. He's not smiling. Just do BBC wife as a Google search, mate, and be on images.
Hang on a minute. I'll imagine what BBC wife's going to bring up. Dear.
Google. Where floats your boat? Okay, Google, give me a cookie, says Ruth.
Okay, right. Google, text my wife, say I'm seeing someone else.
Send.
And right now there's someone smashing their phone to try and keep that text from going out.
Does BBC stand for British Born Chinese? Kind of.
Complete opposite. Look at me.
Welcome to the big show. Yes, we've been shooting the shit here for Christ knows how long. 49 minutes because calls worked. And if you're watching this, the today's show is called Big Mother. We couldn't get.
Because that's what we are.
But we're working now. We're here, and the only way I worked because I made the stupid mistake of installing an update version of Livestream. And the one thing I've got to say is, thank fuck we're getting rid of Livestream. Tossers.
Well, that's completely on record now.
I don't care.
What's that? Yeah,
what are they going to do? They don't want our $500.
It's going to be a four-minute show.
No. So we're going to get rid of Livestream, and UK2 are diving in. They're going to give us a separate server. They're going to give us all the bandwidth we need, and they're going to give us distributed content management, so everyone will get it.
It's really awesome.
Instantly across the world at exactly the same moment.
That is because UK2 are class.
They are the dogs, mate. They're dogs doodars.
They're the mutts.
Absolutely. There we go. So UK2, thank you very much. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, I have a very patient panel, it has to be said. Top left, Alan Hauschel, how are you doing, pal?
I'm doing well, thanks, Ewan.
Busy week coming up for you.
Yeah, the preparing to keep all the websites running for Red Nose Day, Comic Relief.
Good man.
So that's charity. Quite a challenge because, lots of pressure on the night when we've got... thousands of call center people hammering into my website to put all the credit card info through.
Brilliant. You said it was like 100 transactions a second?
It's probably going to peak 100 transactions per second at some point during the night. And yeah, Tesco sort of does about 200 on a very busy day.
I take it you're beta testing that before you go live, though.
We're no children in need in November, and we've done further performance testing and all the rest of it. And we're pretty confident.
God love BT as well. Be fair.
BT does all that free. Doesn't charge the charities a penny.
Bizarre.
That's 148 call centres.
Well done, British Telecom. Thank you very much.
Wow.
While we're talking about beta testers, I want to shout out to all the beta testers who have been helping us with the new website. In another week or so, there'll be a new website going up. We've had Len Peralta, who's been drawing us some graphics for it, which are just stunning. We've had a little preview of them just before the start of Big Here, and they are awesome. And we should get up and running in about a week to 10 days with a brand new website. We've had half a dozen or so, 10 or so base testers who've been helping us, and they've been absolutely fantastic. Andy Vaughan, I think Paul Wheatley wishes we hadn't asked Andy Vaughan to help, because he's been submitting like really top quality glitches and stuff like that, so spot on. Thank you very much to all the base testers who've done it. There's too many to mention here, but they've been very kind. Jeffrey Gamet, how the devil? I haven't seen you in ages, mate.
I know. I've really been missing hanging out with you, Ewan.
Good.
But I'm doing much better because we're both here now.
That's the way it should be. What have you been up to? What have you been up to?
Oh, the usual stuff where I've been like crazy busy every day. Although yesterday I went to my grandmother's 98th birthday.
Oh, my life. Excellent. Wow.
And but I got in trouble because I Yeah, Kelly's heard this story. So I took one of the helium balloons over to my grandmother, and I said, I want you to take a toke on this, and then I'm going to film you saying, I want to get me some hot hobbit action. And
right? And,
of course, like you would.
As one does. And she's never toked helium before, so she wasn't sure if this was safe. And I'm reassuring her this is going to be fine. She's not going to get hurt. And my aunt overheard, and she came over and kind of lit
storming
into me.
Storming over.
And yeah, called my mom over, and I totally got busted for trying to get my grandmother to toke helium.
Well, that's not all right. If she wanted to do it, she wanted to do it. And is she 98? She's all there, isn't she?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Strikes me from the way you just talked about her there. She seems sharp as a tack, so she wants to do. She wants to do it.
Yeah. Well, she got talked out of it by her daughters, and I got busted by her daughters. So that, but you know, at least I gave it a shot.
Thank you very much, Mark. But I'm not reading that out. Next to him. Kelly G.
Hi.
Kelly G. said in exactly the right way. don't get me started.
We were...
Are you all right, mate? You've gone a bit flushed. Even in the pale pallor that you have, you've gone a bit flushed.
It's just... because we've been entertaining each other while you've been trying to sort out the live stream issues. So it's been really funny. And there's been a couple of moments when I've ended up having to laugh really hard.
Good girl. That's really it. Like it. Booker in the chat room says, an old person really needs less lung and more hydrogen in their lungs. Yeah, okay. there's a fair point in that, I suppose. Next is Righty Boy.
Mate, you right?
I'm good, mate. I'm all right. How's life in Norwich?
It's all right, mate. I had a week off last week, but I have to say, boy did so well last week.
He did, didn't he?
You got me proud, Dad.
He kind of got chucked into it because he said, Dad, I want to do a show. I'm like, all right, what do you want to do? He said, I want to do the big show. And then I found out Lee had cried off, Jeff had gone off, and then only Kelly and Doc were coming. I said, right, you can do the big show. Off you go. And he got like 2 minutes notice.
Yeah.
For that.
So, but just like the real world.
Right.
Well, no, what really impressed me wasn't the fact that he actually hung it together. He did all the switching by himself. I did none of that apart
from
just
that. That was awesome.
He did do it all by himself.
Oh, he did the switching as well.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. I wasn't here. I ducked under, and I set it up when Doc turned up so that he could do a split view of Kelly and Doc. But after that, I was in the kitchen because I couldn't listen to him talking live and then listen to the whole thing 3 minutes or a minute delayed. Yeah. So I went in the kitchen to listen. I was belly laughing in there. And he called Kelly out. Kelly was yabbering on and on and on like she does. And and he said, I think we'll have to call this just the Kelly Show. I was like, my boy!
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good man. He's had the first experience of an older lady.
Yes, yes, yeah. He's controlled an old lady.
Yes.
And last but my name is Lee Garrett. One of the flakes from last week.
One of the flakes.
You flaked out, mate. Flaked out.
I actually had to move an event that I was going to be doing on the Thursday to the Friday, and then that got cried off, and then just one of those things.
Okay, fair enough.
We need to use an organisational tool like Slack or something like that, I think. That could be good.
Mark Shepherd in the chat room is saying Ellis rocks. Yes, he
good
does.
And he does. It was a fun. It was super fun, and he did all the switching back and forth. He got the ads in at the end. It was great.
Oh, he got the ads in at the start as well, in the middle of your sentence, I think, as well.
Oh yeah, at one point I'm talking, and he just switches to the banner of the bash. You know.
The Ellis comment about Jeff though was also priceless.
I wish I had been there.
Which, if you want to know what it was, you have to listen. That's the whole point.
Yes, you do.
We've had some correspondence. Thank you very much to the people that have bothered to write in. First one's from Chris Eschweiler. In a weird moment between waking and sleeping, I wondered, what does Ewan use for an audio interface in his studio? I get this a lot, I have to say. To be fair, I'd eaten a shedload of dumplings that my wife's friend had given me that evening. I have no idea what that's a euphemism for, but if your wife's friend shows her your dumplings, then have them. So it may not have been weird as it might have thought. Anyway, one of my live video friends uses these, and he sent me a link to The laptop sound port, model LSP-2. Compact adapter that plugs into the laptop, speakers jack out, and changes the output balance level to mic and signals with which makes with standard XLR audio. What's interesting with it is this thing does an XLR input. So I haven't got a digital picture of it, so there you go. But you can see there on the front of the picture just to the left there that there's an XLR input to it. So you can do a mic into that as well as for your audio. So that was quite interesting. I haven't got the price, I haven't looked it out, but it works well with Windows 7 and Windows XP, so it's not a Mac solution. But Chris does an awful lot of presentation work and stuff like that. So I'm sure he'll have a solution for you if you get in touch with him. At Chris Esch, I think, on Twitter. Dave Harding's written in as well. He said, nice one, Microsoft. He's added on from the thing that he sent in the other week. As well as 100 gig of OneDrive storage for signing on for Bing Rewards, Microsoft are now offering an additional 100 gig for 1 year to all Dropbox users as well as.
Oh.
So if you're a Dropbox user, go over and get 100 gigs straight away on OneDrive, which I am a 1 terabyte user on Dropbox. So that might be useful.
And
Stephen Lowe says, why don't you build James Cameron's Scorpion gunship? And I think we covered that last week as well. And someone else has written in and said, well, you remember Anders said, why don't you do a TIE fighter? Well, someone has. And I was a bit gutted when I saw this. But here you go. There is a TIE fighter. And I've got to say, there's a picture of it that's swinging around on the internet at the moment. And it's somewhere affiliated to the one that we showed you with the Millennium Falcon. But this guy's made a TIE fighter. It flies really, really...
Right?
Well, now hang on, because it flies ultra stably. I thought this would be really kind of front heavy because of the protrusions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't. It flies beautifully stably. And he's put lights on it that flash... for like landing lights, and there's a drive light at the back, so there's a big kind of ion drive at the back that's got a big burning lamp in it, and there's some videos of it flying around at dusk and at night on the internet, and they're absolutely stunning.
Oh my God.
Is it a TIE fighter spelt T-H-A-I? Yes, it runs on chopsticks. Thanks, mate. Brilliant. There we go.
So for people who think that looks funny, I'm just going to jump in and clear this up. This is actually a specific model. It's modeled after Darth Vader's TIE Fighter. It's not one of the standard issue models. So if you're looking at it and thinking of the solid sides that you normally see, there's a reason for that. But that probably is why it's balanced.
Well, the interesting thing is that because Anders suggested the TIE Fighter, and he suggested the TIE Bomber because it was slightly bigger for TIE.
So yeah.
Right.
That would work.
Yeah, the bomber is a nice little... I always loved the body style on the bomber with the two. Mm. I always thought that was cool.
The two tubes side by side. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like the type.
So there you go. We'll have a go at making one at the Bash. We've got the Bash coming up, and we've got the Here's What I Know Day as well, which is on the Sunday, which is going to be awesome. Right, he's doing a talk. I'm doing a talk. Yeah. Waiters is doing a talk. It'll be well worth it. And also, on our own bat, Batwench has decided to create the British Tech Network... I don't know what you call this clan. It's a clan. Kay. It's a clan for.
It's a moist list, isn't it? Isn't that what she calls it?
It's a clan for Dynasty. No, for it's not what? The moist list. This is the clan for Dynasty. So if you play Dynasty on PlayStation or Xbox, you can now join the British Tech Network clan. She's only started it this afternoon, which is why the picture is showing only one clan member and one mate. Because it's Batwing.
It's not a big clan with one person, but
it's not a huge clan. But
it could be.
You do mean Destiny, don't you? And not that awful program with Joan Collins.
Did I say Destiny or not?
You said
Dynasty. I think you said Dynasty.
Dynasty,
which is
no.
a completely different affair.
Well, it was looking at the hieroglyphics carrying guns. It's Destiny. It's definitely Destiny. I'll dub that. I'll edit later. It's definitely Destiny.
No, because I'm just imagining that there's a bunch of people that all get together and watch Joan Collins slap people. And that's really amusing me.
Yes.
Well, there's an advert for Snickers in the UK, which is effectively Joan Collins snapping people. So it's very good, actually. Right. Anyway, so if you want to join the British Tech Network clan, we'll try and get a page up on the BTN site at some point. But just follow Batwench at Batwench on Twitter, and she'll give you the address to how to sign up and stuff like that. But there's a clan for PlayStation and for Xbox if you want to join. So super.
I might have to buy an Xbox game, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, that means I might have to buy an Xbox.
I know Big Chris actually is massive on Density.
I am your density. No, Destiny.
Destiny. I see. I'm up with the kids. The Week in Tech, what have you got? Well, the first thing I'm going to start off with, I'm going to steal the first story again, and it's going to be it's not a discussion piece. The Star Trek fans in Canada have been told to stop spocking up the Canadian $5 bill. The Bank of Canada executives have urged Star Trek fans to stop a campaign to deface the currency to tribute actor Leonard Nimoy. They're saying
it's not defacing, that's an upgrade.
Oh, I agree.
It's actually not illegal. I know they're saying please don't, but it's actually not against the law.
No, it's not. But they're saying it might affect the holographic thing, and also that they might end up getting their thing refused. So there you go. But they're defacing Canada's 7th Prime Minister, Sir Wilfrid Laurier. So there we go. I just wanted to say, no, this is honestly a story. I don't want a discussion about it, because if you want to deface it, fantastic as far as I'm concerned. What I want is any Canadian listeners to send me a $5 bill, please. I'll reimburse you happily through PayPal. But I would love a Leonard Nimoy altered $5 Canadian bill, please.
Two wrong.
That would be
two right.
Send me one. Send me two, actually. Send me two. I'll pay you for them. I'm going to keep one, and I'm going to give one away at the Bash as a prize. That would be a real special prize.
Good. That's awesome.
That would be awesome prize. So, please, if there's any Canadian listeners out there, send me two of those, and I will gladly PayPal you the postage and the relevant fee, etc. But that would be awesome. Who's going to start us off with The Week in Tech? I'm not going to let you out start, Alan, because the last time you did the whole friggin' show. So you're last by default automatically.
I've only got 14 bullet points here.
Oh.
Can I start? I've only got one. I haven't got a backup story. So
good lad.
So that nobody else takes it.
Go on then, start us off, Lee.
Okay, right. My story, it's actually sort of two, actually, that merge into one. Is everybody familiar with Waze, the social sat-nav application?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, well, for those of you listening that aren't, essentially what Waze is it's a bit like TomTom and Garmin, but you can put it on your Android device or iPhone, etc., and you can, as you're driving along, you can report traffic jams or incidents or speed cameras, etc. You get points for the more incidents and stuff that you're able to report, you know, you get level up, etc., and it's supposed to sort of gamify the whole sat-nav experience. Well, in America, what they've actually done, and I personally think this is a fantastic idea, is they've been able to integrate something that's called Amber Alerts, which is essentially, America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response Service. So any missing children that are reported in your area, Waze is actually going to give you an alert. So if your vehicle's been stopped for, I think it's 10 seconds, if your vehicle's stopped, so you're in a safe place, it'll pop up. Mm-hmm. A picture of the child, where they were last seen, and if there is a particular vehicle that the police suspect that may be housing that particular child at that time, then it gives you a phone number and you can report it. How cool is that?
That is like, I'm not taking the piss here, that is like the best milk carton ever.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. I'm not taking the piss. That it's is a really fantastic
no.
idea.
I mean,
and what would be cool as well is if the last
way for Waze to be able to get more people using the service. And you know, if you've got all of these people policing the street almost to a degree, you know, everybody's able to see these particular vehicles that are being highlighted. I just think it's fantastic, and I really hope that this trial's a success and it's able to over here, because we've just had another incident over here in the UK, you know, a horrific sort of news that you're reading, etc. Anything that we can do to help stop these things happening, it's got to be done. So that's the first story. The second story about Waze is that it's now going to be a stock Android application. So any Android phone that you buy, because Google bought Waze in, when was it? I think it was June 2013. So it's actually owned by Google. It's now going to be a stock Android app. So the discussion I was hoping to raise on this is, are the TomTom devices that are dedicated TomTom devices really coming to the end of their lives, and are the phones just going to take over?
Oh, they are so over. It really is now, because the apps that you have now, you know, even like, you know, with the discussion with Apple Maps was rubbish. It's, I use that a lot, and it's a lot better now. And like, obviously, Google Maps on Android is great, and Waze is fantastic. There's no need to spend like 80 quid. It wasn't the iOS app for TomTom like 70 quid, wasn't it?
Well, I think it's down to about, I think it's about 25 notes now, I think. It's in that area. It's certainly come down because it has to, because you've got all of these free options that are out there that do an amazing job. I usually use Waze, I must admit, every day that I'm driving into London. Even though I know the way, it's still kind of handy to have it running because, you know, I want to, A, I want to level up because it's a game and I'm a gamer and, you know, I like doing that. But secondly, you never know when the traffic's going to be there and, you know, you might need to take an alternate route. I think they're fantastic. And you just don't get that, really, that level of interactiveness on dedicated TomTom devices, in my opinion.
No, you don't.
Well, there's no interaction in TomTom at all.
Nah.
I mean, it's like, tell, go where I'm telling you, even if it's a lake or you're in deep pub. So, there's nothing. I mean, Waze is good because of the interaction. You get your little candies and that kind of stuff that come up. So it gives you a bit more of an incentive. And if you report stuff, you know, that's good for all the other road users. But the thing that's quite interesting, going back to your missing persons story element to it, there's with the traffic thing, you don't, if you report a traffic congestion, they don't instantly seem to put that straight up. It seems to be like, okay, if two or three people have said it, then yeah, we'll say it's genuine. So
I think there has to be a consensus to make sure that one person's not just going on and taking, you know, taking the piss for trying to report jams that aren't there, etc. You know, there is an algorithm that runs where you have to have a certain amount of people that are reporting it at that particular time. Which obviously means that you need to have a good portion of people using Waze in your area to make it effective. So by putting it down as a stock Android app is really going to help, because the amount of people that are going to then subsequently be using it is going to go up. And it's also going to improve Google Maps as well, because obviously if you've got information going into Waze and Google own Waze, the Google Maps info for those that are using Google Maps is going to be more up to date with regards to traffic information, etc. I think it's win-win-win, and you know, the day of the TomTom devices and Garmin devices, etc., I think they're really going to phase themselves out, and it's going to be the die-hard people that want to use a device that's dedicated to that one particular job that are going to keep on using them, whereas trendy people like us aren't going to bother.
The only downside and downer is it looks like since Google bought Waze, they're bringing in their anti-Windows Phone policy again. So there's talk that there will not be any further updates for Waze, and you know, Google would like Waze to die on Windows Phone because it's there, but that was pre-Google.
Do you know what I find to be the biggest shame about that, Alan? And it's something that you alluded to earlier. I think Microsoft are doing more cross-platform stuff than they've ever done before, and that anyone else is doing. They want to embrace as many different platforms as possible to be able to achieve their business model, etc. Whereas
absolutely
exactly what you're saying there, other people aren't replicating that, and I think that's a great shame.
I mean, Microsoft are really doing it at the moment. You know, it's not as if Windows Phone is threatening Google's market share at this point, is it? You know, it's pretty petty when you're stamping on someone that is, you know, down at the 10% or less mark.
Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, it's not, it shouldn't be their concern.
No, they should just go, well, we've got an app. Yeah, okay, we'll update it. Maybe we'll update it a little slower than our Android app. You know, you can understand that. But, you know, obviously there were ones like, again, there's no, there was an official Nest app in quite long duration and development. It didn't make it out before Google bought Nest. Google killed it. So there are third-party Nest apps. There is no first-party Nest app. And they've obviously they stamped all over that, the YouTube app that was a really good one that Microsoft eventually built because they were fed up of there not being a good YouTube first-party YouTube app. And, you know, Google took them... got to suing them to take that off the service, and you know, it's definitely not doing.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Well,
there's a difference between do no evil and always do good. And Google walks that line a lot.
And didn't we discuss on this show recently the privacy policy that Waze had? There was something about Waze and the privacy and how because Google owns them. Google finally got around to updating it, and it's not... It verges on creepy, and it sort of sounds like one of those things that could be interpreted as, like, they're just sort of trying to cover their bases, or when Google does it, it's because they're Satan.
To be fair, though, if you're talking about something that's a crowdsourced application for location data, the privacy setting has to be fairly draconian to start with, although it doesn't work.
That's true. But there was something about it, and I only sort of remember the story because I remember discussing it, I think, here, and I don't remember what the actual deal was, just that it was a problem. But I know there are places where Waze is not popular with law enforcement, because speed traps don't work when everybody tells you where the cops are.
Well, that's technically...
So I think that might be part of where the threshold comes in.
It's supposed to slow people down and get them to drive the speed limit. So if people are sending out Waze messages that are doing the same thing, isn't the same goal achieved?
Well, that's...
No, because the goal of a speed trap is to write people tickets.
Yeah, I
mean... Well, okay, so there's the assumed goal.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Right. So that's the issue there. And then... But so I think that might be where that threshold is coming in, is like once a couple of people report it, because there has been a couple of instances that I've seen in the news that just sort of catch my eye, because it's ways that police officers are polluting the data, like saying there's cops where there's not and stuff like that, and trying to mess with it so that the data in that area is unreliable, so that people won't do it, so that then the cops can go back to hanging out wherever it is they're hanging out, and it won't be a big deal.
Now, to me, that's a bigger problem than a speed trap.
Yeah, I don't think that's cool at all.
Yeah, that's very uncool. Yeah.
But it's open to that sort of abuse, though, isn't it? That social element allows people to do that.
Oh, yeah, sure. You can use your powers of crowdsourcing for good or evil, so... Yeah.
We shall see what ends up. Waze, I got to say, I think I like it, other than I forget to start it a lot.
Yeah.
That's probably the worst thing, is that getting it going and saying, right, I'm here. Lots of comments in the chat room. I mean, too many to read out, unfortunately. But Mr. Batwitch says it works better in highly populated areas. He lives in the middle of Cumbria next to Seascape, so he's got a big chance. I bet he's only the only other Waze user is Mrs. Batwitch.
And she's in the car next to him at the time, yeah.
OK Google says, you're not allowed to have OK Google as a chat room, mate. That's not working. That's not right.
No, I think it's really funny.
Says, either you can't have Xbox off either. Waze is great in Atlanta area, but Google Maps scares me in that detection. It detects traffic on side roads accurately. Which I would have thought that's what you would want, but OK.
Well, it's creepy that it is possible.
He's just saying that, you know, he doesn't think there could be enough traffic
and
Waze users. But, I mean, it'll probably, I presume it also hooks into the, you know, the more commercial traffic stuff as well. I know it didn't initially, did it? It tried to go its own way. But does it hook into any of the commercial or semi-commercial traffic stuff now?
Who knows?
I mean, I guess now it's been bought by Google. Google had traffic in its maps, didn't it? So they probably combined it in there by now.
Mm.
A lot of people saying that they use the default iPhone application for directions and that kind of stuff. And Saranac says he uses Nav Free on the iPhone, which solves all his problems. The Copilot on iPhone is far better, says Mr. Batwitch. Copilot is excellent.
I can vouch for that. Copilot is without doubt the most complete sat-nav app I've ever used on a phone, especially for the point of interest stuff. It is the best, but it was pricey, which is why I used the free options. But it is very good, Copilot.
Good. I've got to say, I've got my Toyota Go stuff built in, which does fairly well. It's a bit weird in some of the routes that it picks once in a while, but it's not too bad at all. But when I get some places, I end up using the iPhone application, and it works a lot better.
Definitely.
It's very, very good. At the end of the road, turn left. Good quality message as well. Love Waze. Good stories, mate. Thank you. Who's next?
Go on, mate. Give me a go.
Righty boy.
not like that. I've got Kelly again. I want to talk about mobile payments and some of the information that came out of Mobile World Congress this week. And obviously, Apple kind of opened the floodgates with Apple Pay with the iPhone 6. Then this week you've got Samsung coming out with Samsung Pay, which is obviously, I think it's a company called Loop Pay that they bought, that it mimics magnetic strip swipes in the States. But then PayPal announced this week as well that they've bought a thing called Paydian, which is for mobile payments. And they've already got a mobile payment solution. And just like, for example, where I work, you know, I work in a university, and we're meant to be one estate. We have three payment methods, which is one, which is contactless payment. We have one called Droplet. We have one called Squidoo. They all require different types of hardware or apps or different methods of doing it. Do we just think that in this infancy of kind of mobile payments, that it's already far too noisy? Because shouldn't we have a standard by now?
And don't forget, you've also got Google recently bought Softcard.
So it gets even worse. It's like, is for the layman, that is a really confusing amount of different apps. You kind of turn up to a terminal and go, what do I pay with? It's kind of like, you know, I don't know, Apple Pay has opened the flood doors to this mobile payment thing, you know, secure payments with your finger and all that sort of thing. But it's just really weird that there are so many so soon. You know, like I say, where I work, there are three already, and just in one place. It's really weird.
The kind of thing that makes me think is the fact that this is the technology for this hasn't suddenly come alive. Apple wasn't the first to just suddenly go, bang, here we go.
No.
You know, this stuff's been kicking around for a long time in some form or another. But because Apple's done it, everyone seems to go, oh, we're going to lose out if we don't get it done.
Isn't it interesting how Apple tends to be the catalyst for technologies like this?
Well, and wrongly.
Apple didn't invent USB. As a matter of fact, it was about to be dead. Mm-hmm. And Intel showed it to them, and they're like, yeah, let's give this a shot. Mm. And all of a sudden, everyone has to have USB. And we have other examples if I were to spend time actually thinking. But I do find it interesting that technologies like this can just kind of languish until Apple decides it's the thing, and then all of a sudden it's a thing for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah.
But the confusion is for just the, you know, obviously we're technical, we know what we're doing. Like I say, I can go to the bar tomorrow and buy a pint, and there are three different ways I can pay for it. It's just absolutely crazy that that is the way that it works. So early on, which is the crazy thing. It's just weird that, you know, we could probably work out, I want to use Apple Pay, I want to use Squidoo, I want to use Droplet, I want to use Google Wallet, I want to use PayPal, I want to, you know, but for normal people, they're going to shy away from this because it's just so noisy.
Well, Google Wallet's been around a long time. I think it's just getting a lot more attention.
It's getting more attention because of Apple Pay.
Yeah, because, I mean, I remember, I think it was Jeff who said that he was paying at some store, and the girl at the checkout said, oh, I wish my phone could do that. I only have Android. And she totally could have.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, that was me. And her phone totally had support for NFC payments. But it wasn't an iPhone. She didn't think she had contactless payment support.
Right.
Windows Phone has had wallet support for a long time, but Microsoft made an absolutely stupid idea, and you had to have a secure SIM card from your carrier to make it work.
Goody. You know, and how many carriers offer that?
It was going to launch initially on Orange in France and never went any further. So no SIM card was ever available. And that was 2-3 years ago. Microsoft Wallet in the phones was supposed to
do. Oh, that's a giant bucket of awesome.
Because the question I was going to ask with Kelly and Jeff being here is obviously the Loop Pay system that Samsung bought, it mimics the magnetic swipe payment. Obviously, what is the rollout of chip and PIN in America? Is that a slow thing or is that a rapid thing?
Painfully slow. It still hasn't happened. It's going to start rolling out later this year. Next year?
I thought it was next. I thought it had to have happened by the end of next year.
Maybe that's what it is.
So it's actually the resistance to chip and pin in this country has been remarkable. Out of the door.
Can we just go back on that? Hang on, Jeff. The resistance to chip and pin has been remarkable in this country.
Oh, yeah.
Are you out of remarkable, your freaking
mind? We're not getting chip and pin. We're not even getting chip and pin. It's chip and sign. Uh-huh.
Chip and you're so anti chip and pin, you're getting Chip and Dale back again instead. I mean, what on earth is the resistance to chip and pin? You elected George W. Bush twice, which is you're all together, which is really frigging stupid, and you're rejecting chip and pin as well as.
Where does the resistance come from? Jeff, what are the
resistance
reasons
comes
it?
In part from, well, in big part from retailers, and then there's also the resistance that comes from fear of change, and so there's been this distrust that has been sown, in many cases through retailers, that it's not secure, it's not reliable, the system just doesn't work, our readers don't work. Some companies tried turning on their smart card chip readers a few years ago, and the amount of money that they were dumping into the systems, actually Best Buy is a good example. They turned it on for a little while and then shut the whole thing down because what it was costing them to support it was off the charts. So they just shut it down. But I don't see how it could have been that difficult to support. But what do I know? I don't actually have to support it.
I think a lot of the problem is that point of sale in this country, by and large, is olden. And for a company to slowly roll out newer stuff would be less expensive, but apparently at some point someone convinced like every retailer that, you know, if you're Best Buy and you have thousands of locations, every one of the registers at those all has to be upgraded at exactly the same time, and it's like making people panic. And so like I have a card with a chip in it and I still can't pay with that except for one place that I regularly go to. Can I slide in and use the chip to actually create the transaction instead of the Stripe? And that place is a local used record store.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah,
people in the United States are more trusting, or they think the system is safer and more secure, to hand their credit card over to a server at a restaurant and let that person disappear with it
for
10 minutes. They will trust that, but they won't trust a card system where their credit card number is not passed through the transaction and where other people don't get to have access to their card. There's a huge logical disconnect.
I was out with a customer last week and the girl said, can I have your card? So I'm, yeah, sure, no problem. So I handed my card over and she said, oh, this machine's not working. And she started to walk away and I was like, whoa, where do you think you're going with my card? And she just looked at me. I said, leave the card, go and get another machine. And it was there was a second of recognition on her face, like I was being a bit rude, but then she was like, no, okay, yeah, no, I shouldn't have done that. That's fair. There you go.
Yeah.
And in this country, no one would think twice about that.
Yeah,
matter of fact,
and skimming
if
is
you
massive
told
in your
the person, leave my card and go get the reader and bring it, they would think that you're being absolutely ridiculous and unreasonable.
That's paranoid. Yeah. What are you doing? It's just easier if I walk away with your card and you don't get to know what I'm doing with it. I mean, and the thing that I'm confounded by is that somehow it is absolutely 100% up to retailers that this is a problem, because one of the examples I have illustrated to you guys in the past is that I'm on, I think in the last, I guess it would be 15 months now because we're into March. I've had 4 different credit cards because I get it because somebody says your information may have been compromised. We're sending you a new card. And so then I get a new one. And I used to be able to memorize the credit card number, and now I can't anymore because I only get it for a couple of months before then they decide they have to send me a new one. And it's aggravating. And you have to change everything, which is even more aggravating. And the thing that I wonder is that can be cheap for them to continue to send me a card quarterly at this point. Because first they have to send a letter and let me know it happened. And then they have to send me a card. And, you know, there's a cost to mailing all of that stuff. There's a cost to printing the card. There's an increased cost in the card now because the card I get has a chip in it. So why is this okay? Why is this an acceptable alternative? It seems to me that somebody like Visa or somebody like MasterCard would stand up and say, no, this is not how it's going to be because we're tired of having to send people new credit cards every 20 minutes. Let's see if we can at least move to a tokenized system with the chip. Like, I know what kind of money these guys are making, and I don't understand why it's not something that could be subsidized or whatever. So,
is it because in the UK and Europe, you know, there was no argument. The banks mandated all you merchants will go to chip and pin. Otherwise, we're not processing your cards. I'm wondering whether America, the problem is you've got the giant retailers and then you've got quite a lot of different banks, including regional banks. Maybe the banks actually aren't as powerful as the retailers in the US, whereas the banks are definitely more powerful than the retailers and just mandate it. Is that the problem? Is that the core of the problem?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That could be part of the problem, but I think the bigger problem is that people and retailers just simply didn't want to take the time and invest the money to make a more secure system work.
Is there a chance America's going to sort of leapfrog and then get chip and pin by the back door in the...
No.
They'll all be excited. Well, I'm wondering, are they going to be excited enough about phone payments or NFC to get those and you end up with chip and pin by accident?
Well, okay, so when you get the card readers, retailers have to make this transition by, I guess, the end of next year. And so just through the nature of that transition for their reader systems, they will have chip and pin plus NFC built in. That's just how the devices will come. So then it's up to them to decide whether or not they're going to go back and disable the NFC part. Now, considering how popular Apple Pay has become and how many people are demanding that retailers accept Apple Pay, my guess is that it will be much easier to get the retailers to accept that. And in the end, the chip and pin part will just simply come along because that will be in the readers that they have to buy to support NFC payments.
Yeah. I think that is your hope, isn't it, for finally getting chip and pin, is the sexiness of NFC.
Yeah.
Definitely. Good story.
Your retailers can't even agree on an NFC standard, can they? Because Apple Pay hasn't been taken by a huge selection, have they? They've gone for this other alternative, which I can't remember the name of.
I mean, you guys...
Yeah, the one that gives them all of your private information.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
Currency.
Currency, that's it. Currency.
America accepting contactless payment. That's going to be a tough one. Up to £20 in the UK, up to £30 now. You just dab your card on the machine. Boom, it's gone.
Awesome.
No number, no signature, nothing.
Machine great, and you know, it works on the London Tube now. Contactless card.
Walk up to the tube station, the subway, and you just hit on the reader, and it takes a reading the e-card, and when you get out the other end, wherever you've got out, it charges you the requisite amount.
Yeah, and if you keep traveling, then it works out, you know, what's the cheapest cost for the number of, you know, would you have been better on a return or a single, and charges you at the end of the day.
And you've got a maximum charge, haven't you, of something like £8 or something for the day, so you can't get charged any more than that.
It works out cheaper than the Oyster card. In 90% of journeys, it's cheaper than Oyster. So, I mean, I've got an Oyster that's on auto top-up, so every time I get to below £10, it gives me £20. I need to finish that, I think.
That's brilliant.
Do you all dab, do ya? Says iBookery. Yes, we dab and go, mate. You turn up the dog.
A little dabble, do ya?
Food. You just go dab on the thing and phew, you're off. That's it. All done.
Add it in pubs.
The only one, of course, that they warn you about on the tube is, you know, don't be tempted to slap your whole wallet down. Otherwise, you know, two or three of your cards might decide to get debited at the same time.
Well, that shouldn't happen, though. Card clash should go sod off. I've got too many signals here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it shouldn't do.
They are still warning about it. I'm hoping they've got sensible systems in place, but
yeah, they have.
There are big warnings.
I do a lot of work for London Underground. They're very careful about it, and they have done a great job. Cool. Most retailers don't ask for a signature in the US under $100. Brightstar says is deploying a 10-year-old technology the wisest thing. Seems to be the default in the US, mate. So, Kelly, what was your story, girl?
Well, I did have one about today's Google Doodle because I thought that was kind of nifty.
What was that? Because I did have a look, but I never got a chance to look.
Let me double check because I'm going to get his name wrong. His name is Momofuku Ando, and he founded Nissin Food Products, the purveyor of cup noodle. Not cup o' noodles, not cup of noodles, cup noodle.
Oh, okay.
And this is a subject that is near and dear to my heart because I heard a really interesting talk that someone gave at a Portland Ignite
Kelly, before we go on any further. So mm-hmm. you haven't got Gerardus Mercator today?
No.
We have.
No, that's who I've got. It's his 503rd birthday, apparently.
He was born in Rupelmond in Belgium, and he died in Duisburg in Germany, which is where Anna Sophie Reinhardt lives. Hello, Anna. Because I looked at the doodle, and I was kind of like, as soon as you said pot noodles, I was kind of like, no, this guy's a bit closer to Magellan than pot noodles. He was a cartographer, philosopher, and mathematician, best known for his work in cartography, in the particular world, the map of the 1569, based on the new prediction, which represented sailing courses of a constant bearing as straight lines. That's UK.
That's awesome.
Gerardus Mercator.
And you wonder why people in the United States are freaked out about credit cards that have chips in them.
Exactly. So you need to post us the picture of your Google Doodle because we just simply don't have it.
Okay. Let me give you a link that will show the Google Doodle. I thought it was interesting because it's his 105th birthday, so that's why we got him. And I'm not sure why you guys wouldn't have. You have cup noodle, right? I mean, so here's the thing.
UK's more pot noodle.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me about this is, I don't know if you guys are familiar then, so I'll just describe it. You get there. It's a styrofoam cup. It's about this tall. Like iPhone 6 Plus sized, and you hold it, and it's got this paper on the top. You peel it off, you pour boiling water in, and you lay the paper back over it, and you set your fork on it or whatever. And then in like 3 minutes, it's ramen.
Yeah, we get that.
We don't get
chip and pin. You don't, and we do get pot noodles. In fact, okay. I think actually, I take issue that we may have invented pot noodle.
This guy did. This is why he's the Google Doodle,
right?
And he's Taiwanese and Japanese. And anyway, the reason that I think he's really interesting is because the way that cup noodle became possible was a hack. And so what he did, he was in post-World War II Japan, I think it was, and people were waiting for ramen, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And so he started trying to figure out how people could do this at home and do it conveniently. And one of the things that he figured out was when you put the hot water in, the noodles would float. And this was like the design challenge that he had. And so the way that that he ended up solving the problem was finding a way to form the noodles in such a fashion so that they sort of stick to the sides of the cup. And then when you pour the water in, they stay there until the water, and then once they start to absorb the water, they start to get heavy, and then you get, you know, regular cup noodle. So I think, to me, he's an interesting guy because he found an interesting solution to this problem that he was having in trying to give people ramen and in their homes, and I thought it was great, and I'm sure all of us at this point have probably eaten far more than our share of cup noodle or
pretty much
plain ramen or, you know, whatever. And so I figured it was probably a good story for today.
Now, here's the interesting thing, because I'd never heard of ramen noodle until a few years ago. And I still don't actually know what ramen means. What's ramen noodle? Because we have noodles. We have egg noodles in the UK that you can buy. But there's no ramen noodles for sale in the UK.
I just assumed it was a brand. Maybe not. I don't know.
Okay. But, no, it's like a generic. It's a generic word for noodles in broth, I believe. Because you can get varieties of ramen. There's like tofu ramen, and there's other kinds of ramen.
Top Ramen is the brand.
Yeah, Top Ramen is a brand. But generally, I think ramen is just a thin white noodle, because it's not necessarily soba. It's not necessarily yakisoba or buckwheat noodle or rice noodle or anything else. It's usually flour noodle and cook, and they cook quick. It's like almost like an instant noodle, and then you get it in some sort of flavor of broth. So yeah. Like cup noodle is a brand, but ramen is like just the word for what you're getting when you do that.
Okay, well, we get pot noodle, so that's obviously a ramen. Ooh, love pot noodle. Some of them. They're excellent.
When you,
when you get your ass to the UK, guys, you'll have to try pot noodle.
Hey, but remember, you know, if you try the beef and... which one is it? The beef and tomato pot noodle is vegetarian.
Yes.
Okay.
Suitable for vegetarians.
We get a thing called beef oxo here, and allegedly that's safe for vegetarians as well, although they do a vegetarian stock cube. It's all flavourings. I used to work at a company called Quest, and they do food flavourings, and... all of the stuff that they put in is just powdered stuff. It's not, you know, it's good stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's one of the flavours that they got. It's emulsifier, and it's £36 a kilo. It's the most expensive food ingredient that they put in, and it's made from human hair called cysteine. And it goes in your Doritos and all that kind of stuff. So it's sprayed on. And the only place they can get the hair that's clean and not tainted by... Western shampoos and that kind of stuff is Indochina. That's why it costs so much, because there's hardly anyone that doesn't use shampoo that's willing to donate their hair. There you go, that's my story.
I'll tell you what, this show has been fantastic if people want to learn anything but tech. You've really taught, there's been some really, really good stuff learned, hasn't there? We now know about noodles, we know about Gerardus Mercator making maps and stuff. This is a really good show.
If you want to absorb utter bollocks, come to BritishTechNetwork.com. Telling you.
That's what the B stands for.
Jeffrey, what's your sex toy this week? I mean, story this week.
I don't have a good sex toy this week.
Good man. Did you see the Vibrator Museum?
I was looking at that
just a
few minutes ago. Thank you, Batwench, for the link. And how have I been in San Francisco so many times and not known about the Vibrator Museum?
You've never been there?
Oh, no. Kelly, come on.
How?
I know. How have I missed this?
There's a real buzz about it, you know.
that's
word on the street. Yeah, next time I'm in San Francisco, that's on my to-do list. So, but my story today... surprisingly fits really well with this whole theme of not exactly tech, and I need to grab the link for it for the showroom. So I found this article about this researcher that has been doing work to figure out where the best places in the United States would be to go to avoid a zombie outbreak. And the answer is the Rocky Mountains. Meaning, come hang with me if there's a zombie outbreak.
Why? Okay. What's the logic on that one, then?
The logic is that a zombie outbreak, and actually what he's going to end up doing with a lot of this research is use it to show how disease and infection spreads. And so every model that he made showed that the farther out of populated areas you get, the longer it takes for an infestation, in this case, a zombie infestation, to get there and to take hold. And so his models showed that if you went into the Rocky Mountains, that you had a much higher likelihood of completely avoiding a zombie outbreak.
Right, see, okay.
All I can think of is me and Jeff in a cave in the Rocky Mountains with a pot noodle.
Yeah, but you're not thinking about whether or not there's a zombie attack, are you?
And a stolen,
vibrator.
Jeff, you, ramen noodles, and a stolen vibrator from the museum.
It sounds, you know, like pie.
For some people, that's that right there would be a fantasy come true.
I think, hang on, there we go. Jeff, me, and a stolen vibrator.
That's not
the
show title, is it?
That's the show title.
That's the show title.
There you go, right there.
You owe me money unless you want me to put on the end, said righty.
The problem is, you know, it just...
The other one.
Jeff, Paul, one cup.
No. The noodle Google Doodle is another option, I suppose.
I need to talk to his wife. He's getting out of control.
What was that? Jeff and Paul, one cup.
I can just imagine the fanfic now, and I really wish I couldn't imagine.
This is true. You don't wish.
Give me big biceps, please.
Well, of course.
We live in Norwich, mate, allegedly.
Hey!
Hey, moving on. That was a great story. So this story, Jeff, completely misses the opportunity of the fact that there's no scientific proof of zombieism.
I know.
I don't know. I live in Norwich.
That was part of the beauty of the research, is that this guy spent all this time doing this research on how to avoid a zombie infestation, and there's no such thing as a zombie.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
Yet.
That's a good point. And when the zombies come, I'm ready. Because I'm already right at the base of the Rocky Mountains.
But what was the... I just don't understand the logic of why the Rockies are so...
Because the there are so many bananas. Parts of our mountain chain that is are very remote. And are areas that not only are they remote, but they are not populated or only have a few people. So we have these massive parts of the United States, and since I'm in Colorado, there are massive parts of Colorado where there just simply are no people, period.
Oh, yeah. There's big chunks of Oregon that are that way, too.
And for... people that live in densely populated countries, it's really hard to imagine that we have areas where you can climb up to the top of a mountain and you can see to the horizon in all directions and there's no sign of civilization at all.
Yeah, but the problem is, if everyone knows that the Rockies are a safe place to go, all the zombies are going to be in the friggin' Rockies because all the people are going to be in the friggin' Rockies.
Right, which means that I'm just going to have to build a fort and keep all the stupid people out.
Okay, fair enough.
But you're right. Did his model account for all the people fleeing the cities at the first point of an infectious disease?
There's going to be a long...
His model did show the change over time as more people moved into the mountainous areas.
Okay.
So you can see that the areas in the mountains where the zombies aren't creating outbreaks does get smaller and smaller over time.
I can't believe we're discussing seriously. Where did he get funding for this study? Because if he got it from the public coffers, he wants stringing up by the nearest lamppost.
I think he said it was
my guess is he used his chip and sign card to get the money.
Yeah. Bookery wants to know whether zombies like gin, Jeff.
They don't, which means that that our gin supply is going to be safe.
The gin supply will live on. That's good. Spot on. Thank you very much. Kelly, what was your story, Mrs.?
It was the noodles.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Kelly, your delivery?
I kind of washed over that.
Was awesome.
I kind of washed over that because we'd done the Gerardo thing. I do apologize. So last but by no means least then, who's not gone? Everyone's gone. It's only Alan. The rest of the show's yours, bud. Like the last show was, really, but...
All 14 bullet points. Go.
Well, I was wondering, did you want me to read out some of these bullet points and people can say which ones they're interested in actually talking about?
Well, tell us the story first and then we'll decide.
Well, the problem was, it's been a while, obviously, and the Pocket Show also has not on a moment. And we've had Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, and obviously we've just had GDC kicking off.
Yeah.
So there's a chunk of stuff from Mobile World Congress. I'm afraid it is a chunk of it. Most of it is sort of Microsoft focused, but I got one non-Microsoft focused one that might be worthwhile. And then a bit of stuff from GDC, the Game Development Conference. If you want, I've got a Macintosh story.
No, that's for tomorrow.
Oh, no.
Steady on. You might burst into flames midway through as well, so don't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Tell us your story about GDC then. Come on.
Okay. Well, one little geeky thing I'm pleased with that they announced at the top of the thing is the reboot of Elite Dangerous is coming to Xbox One this summer.
Is this as in space thingy?
Yeah.
As in trading?
It's the reboot of that, and it's a really gorgeous PC game at the moment, and it's coming to Xbox.
It's coming onto the Mac soon as well, isn't it? Believe if it's not out already.
Exclusive to the PS4 and the Mac in due course, announced when.
I've got wood.
But it is a timed issue. I mean, the big stuff from GDC was obviously, so far as I'm concerned, was Microsoft talking more about all of the universal apps, and also that they seem to be putting a big push on the gaming side of things for Windows 10, but obviously Xbox intruding and spreading into Windows 10 and into Windows 10 for phones, and the fact is they've already got universal apps to degrees now, but it will all be publishing one app into one app store, and then that can work across everything, Xbox, all the different tablets, convertibles, laptops, desktops, and the phones, partly because they're all going to have a common underlying code base, including things like DirectX 12, and they're opening up the full Xbox Live SDK as well, so you'll be able to get cross-device play. You'll be able to do all of the full friends and cross-device chat. And also, they're finally getting to deliver on, they've said second half of this year, they will finally deliver on their promise that any Xbox One retail console can become a dev kit, can be converted into a development kit.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty close.
That was actually something I was going to criticize about Microsoft earlier today, was the breathtaking lack of ecosystem and developer support, which I think is a big part of why Windows 8 was never a great success, was because none of that mobile stuff was really encouraged. And that's one of the things that Apple has in spades, is all those people who really want to develop, and they make it pretty uncomplicated. And it seems like for Microsoft, that's been kind of complex. So I'm glad to see that they're changing that, at least in one aspect. So cool.
It's quite amazing, isn't it, that everything that we were complaining about Microsoft for, and we want to complain about them, is running out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're starting to deal with everything, aren't they?
Took them long enough, but yes.
Which is better for Apple.
They need 3 versions for everything, don't they, to get it right?
Well,
at least.
See, I mean, someone signed into the chat room as Paul's sheep, unfortunately.
Well, that theory certainly holds for CEOs.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I was talking last week on the Mac show, and everyone was going on about the rumour mill around the Apple Watch and that kind of stuff. And I've talked to Ken this week, macOS Ken on Twitter, about what I think the watch needs to do, because I think obsolescence is a big issue for it, and that's the elephant in the room, if you like, with it, that could stop its sales. And it struck me that actually, when people are saying what's wrong with your product, or when people are rumouring about what your product will do, regardless of who you are, that's actually telling you what your product should do.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone that's going, Microsoft products don't do the following, well, Nadella's done something fairly simple and very logical, which is say, right, if everyone's saying these products are wrong because they're not doing the following, let's make them do the following. Oh.
Now see, that just kind of makes sense.
And the rumor mill for Apple is beautiful because, you know, the rumor mill comes out and says, oh, the new thing's going to do this and this and this and this and this, and Apple go, that would be really cool, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If they're sensible. So Microsoft should be responding to these comments and should be coming out with the SDKs to fulfill developers' requirements when developers go, it doesn't fulfill our requirements of.
One of the big things they were saying, actually, at the GDC, you can see the whole GDC sort of keynote from them. That's up on YouTube. One of the big things was they were saying, you know, we're doing all this stuff and getting it out there early. We're still listening. It's still all able to be changed. And yeah, Microsoft is getting and working on feedback.
Yeah, I mean, there's comments in the
chat. That's awesome.
There's comment in the chat room here that Mark Shepard's saying that that's how you get feature bloating, however, which is a fair point. And Saranac says, yeah, okay, that works up to a point, Ewan.
Right. But there's you know, like, the one clear example I can give you is the original iPad didn't have a camera, and everybody went, why wouldn't you put a camera in it? And so now they have a camera. People said a lot of other things that it should have, too, but that was one that apparently loads of people were focused on. So
I think the in Apple One, just go to the iPhone One there, and the point you're making, Kelly, the recessed headphone socket is the one thing.
Mm-hmm.
That suddenly disappeared because everyone said, this is shit.
It's crap. Yeah, I can't use anything else, and I hate it. Yeah,
really stupid idea.
And sometimes you need to sort of get something out into the world to determine that. And your response to that is where companies succeed and fail, in my estimation. How much you can listen and how much you can innovate on your own. Like, that mix is where it comes down. But this is just another piece of a fundamental shift that we're seeing in Microsoft to a more welcoming company, a more open company. They sort of feel like the impression I get is that this version of Microsoft, Nadella's Microsoft, feels like it has to compete and like it has to earn all those people. Like, it's not just a built-in user base. And I think that's amazing. And it's really fun to watch them do this and up their game. And because as soon as they start really innovating and competing and listening to that feedback, then, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. Now Apple's going to be like, have you seen the new Windows phone? Like, we're going to have to step up. And, you know, Apple does a certain amount of stuff in response to other people, and Microsoft does stuff in response to other people, and then Samsung watches all of them and does the same thing. So, zing. So I think there's a lot of interest. I'm really interested in what Microsoft's doing as a result of this, because this is another piece of that fundamental shift, and I really enjoy watching where that goes.
Yeah, Microsoft's all over. I'm an Apple user, but Microsoft is all over my devices, my iPad, my iPhone, my Macs, my iMac, because I've got OneNote, OneDrive, Office for iPad. It's really, really, they've got it. They haven't got to set it through Windows anymore. They can sell their services anywhere they like now.
Yeah, and that was the big thing. They had to break the addiction to, we must protect Windows. Now Windows is an enabler for the services, and they're okay that you get those services elsewhere if you want, but they are going to try and make things better on Windows, or better sooner on Windows, because they can control more of the ecosystem.
Right.
But they're not
which
gonna,
is great.
Yeah, they're not, but they're not going to turn the blind eye or abandon people on who, you know, make other lifestyle choices.
Yeah. Well, I pay the money for OneDrive. I pay the money for OneDrive on all my devices, and I'm not. I am a Windows user at work, but not at home. But I do pay because I think OneDrive is the best solution out there.
And it wouldn't be if they were still under the impression that everybody uses Windows. We don't have to try that hard. Whatever Apple's doing over there, that's adorable. And if they they acted for so long like there was no competition, there was nothing they had to do, like everybody would just sort of accept whatever it was that you were giving them. Oh, you don't like the ribbon? Isn't that just too bad? You know, and I feel like there's a little bit less of that now, and it's very nice to see.
But it's not just that. It's the fact that they've laxed on so many things. Like they,
I know.
You could have OneDrive and you could have a Chromebook now. And because there's Office Online, you haven't got to have anything installed anymore, have you? You can do everything online now. They've actually worked it out. It's actually, obviously, I'm a personal OneDrive user. I'm a 365 user as well for work. And it just works absolutely flawlessly. Sharing documents and everything, it works brilliantly because and obviously they've got Dropbox integration now. You can now share your Dropbox documents online in 365.
Righty, have you got a personal OneDrive or have you got a business one?
I've got a personal one that I pay for home, but obviously through work we've got the business one for work as well. So you get the unlimited storage.
And
as well.
how do you use that? Do you use that on a Mac at all? Because I'm still waiting for the OneDrive for Business Mac app to come out. And it's not available yet, is it?
Yeah, a beta version.
The beta version's out, is it?
Preview of the app.
Ooh, thank you. So
just Google it. Yeah, just OneDrive for Business app for Mac. It's in beta. Download it now.
There's preview for Office as well today, isn't it? That's come out. But yeah. I had 2.5 hours left to go with 10 minutes left to go to the show. So
2016.
Well, I mean, also part of this sort of cross-platform thing, obviously we have the Samsung Galaxy S6 coming pre-bundled with OneDrive, OneNote and Skype and supposedly all the Office apps instead of the historical Samsung rubbish.
I believe really
people
clever.
Were very happy
that's
with it.
That's really clever.
And Sony is also bundling Office apps pre-installed on its latest tablet that was at Mobile World Congress, the Z4. Yeah. They've managed to get Office on there as well, pre-installed.
It brings it back in the enterprise market as well. It's Word and PowerPoint are things that people recognise, you know. I know we've got iCloud, Keynote and Pages and all that sort of thing, but Word and Excel and those sort of things, things that people remember. And if I can get it on my iPad now, I think on iPad now, if you even a standard user now, you can actually use them for free, can't you, to edit?
Yes, they unlocked quite a bit of extra features for free recently on iPad.
Yeah. Because people complained and wouldn't use it, and then they said, okay, you can edit but not create if you don't have an Office 365 account, and now you can. It's great.
Well, my default
app, the iPhone version, you can do everything.
Yeah.
For free.
The default mail app on my iPhone is Outlook, because it kicks ass. It's amazing. It's got all the features of the mailbox, you can schedule things, you can tell things to come back later on, and I know they bought it off someone else, but actually, the best mail app on Android and iPhone right now is Outlook. And you would never, a year ago, you'd never have thought that.
There was one sort of coming security thing from Mobile World Congress that I thought also was particularly interesting. The Qualcomm 3D ultrasound fingerprint tech coming in their new Snapdragon processors. Did anyone catch that one? Basically they've Qualcomm, part of their new Snapdragon processors, there will be a new fingerprint reading tech. Uses ultrasound, but that means it actually captures 3D, including all the ridges and the pores and stuff. So it says it's a lot more secure. You know, you can't fake it with a 2D print of someone's fingerprint anymore. It also can work through underneath the phone through almost any material, glass, metal, plastic, so they don't necessarily need to put it on an exposed button anymore. It can see through dirt and smudges on your finger, and it is a hold in place sort of thing. So it looks like Samsung for their S6 obviously felt they needed something custom sooner. But I have a feeling that a lot of Android phones, and I have a funny suspect that the next Windows 10 phones will be getting this newer, possibly better version of fingerprint scanning tech.
Yeah. I'm really interested in seeing how well this works, because if it's very reliable, I mean, can you imagine just being able to pick up your smartphone and it doesn't matter where your thumb is, it knows to read it and unlock your phone.
Yeah.
I mean, that by itself is really cool. But then knowing that you can scan larger areas because you could have the entire surface of your phone be a scanner now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, as I say, it's still got to be a reasonably precise location. But they can scan through the outer form factor of the device. Whereas before, it all had to be, you know, a particular different, you know, sensor. And that's why they sort of integrated into the home buttons, which is logical, but apparently it gives more freedom. They don't necessarily have to have a scanning home button. And maybe that also means they can protect the sensor a bit more because they can bury it a bit deeper in the phone.
Sure.
There's a video and some number of reports, and there were actually a lot of hands-on demo units at Mobile World Congress. So press were trying it hands-on. And
now Qualcomm owns every one of their fingerprints.
Oh, steady on. Right? Let's not do that.
Just trying to stir it up.
No, let's not do that. We're not starting that stuff off. This podcast and all the others. Well, we'd like to tell you about Uber in Birmingham because apparently they've expanded to the second city. But I have used it 3 times today to try and get an Uber cab. And here you go. Birmingham still apparently loves Uber. Or vice versa, but all cars are in use. Still no Uber cabs in Birmingham, despite the fact they've been here for a month now. And we are supported by UK2, and that support is about to go exponentially huge. We've got a few of their affiliates, so 100tb.com is a great service which gives you dedicated, fantastically large servers that you can get a great deal on. That's for American listeners particularly. So go out there and check the details. Whether our UK offer codes work on that, we haven't kind of flattened that out yet, but we think they will. UK2 are also picking up the streaming. If you were here at the start of this show, you'll know that live stream is a complete and utter tosspot. Please update to our new software. It'll be just fine. No, it won't. Thank you very much. It doesn't work at all. So we've had to roll back to old stuff as well. So UK2 are taking up the streaming stuff. We're going to get distributed content management as well. So wherever you are in the world, you will get the feed at the same time. There will be no delay for anyone anywhere at any time. So UK2, thank you very much to them. They support us. Please support them. Please go and check out, if you're in the US, 100tb.com. You can't do it through our website as yet, but if you can send an at message to UK2 on Twitter, you know, just send at UK2, thanks for supporting British Tech Network. That'd be really, really cool. But you must use britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and use the click-through and use the offer codes. Otherwise, we don't get any credit for it at all. So please, please, please do that.
Yeah, and I was just saying to you, Ewan, before the show, I worked out that I bought my first domain name from UK2 in 1994, and I've never had a reason to leave them. So 21 years.
21 years. We must have at UK2's oldest customer. In oldest as in longest.
Thanks for...
As in longest, not
yeah. But that was you know, my first year of university. Grab my surname as a .com domain name.
Wow, and you still own it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, mate. That's brilliant.
All my five or six domains, maybe eight, with UK2.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Well done, mate. Thank you, and thank you, UK2. Please support them. Also, Wirecast are brilliant. They look after us. They've given us $2,000's worth of software, so it can't be too bad. We are checking out all the stuff that we do. We chuck out to you, comes through Wirecast. And you're sitting going, well, okay, but I don't need a £1,000 piece of software, thanks very much. Well, check out screencasting with ScreenFlow, because ScreenFlow is $50, something like that, and it's absolutely brilliant. It's a fantastic piece of software, and it's not a huge cost, and it's absolutely brilliant for getting what you want on the screen out to all your people, either by a screencast or via a YouTube video or something like that, and it does massive resolutions as well, if you really want to. You can dump it out uncompressed or compressed, it's your choice. So check out Telestream, they're brilliant. Don't forget Batwench's Dynasty clan.
Destiny.
That when she's density clan. Destiny clan. There we go. And have a good time with them, because it's absolutely brilliant. And also, don't forget the bash. The bash is coming up. It's the 4th of July. £20 a ticket if you're an adult. Free if you're a kid. That £20 isn't a ticket for entry. When you get here, don't bring anything with you. Just bring yourself, because all your beer, all your food, all your wine, all your soft drinks, all your fun and entertainment will be provided by us. It's your contribution to the event. The venue costs us £400 alone. So we've got a fair old bit to sell before we even break even on the venue itself, before we start buying beer and food. The food is stunning. I mean, Leanne, who makes the food, does an incredible job. So
the food is immense. I can totally vouch for that. Those brownies.
Come hungry.
That dessert. Oh.
Oh, brownies.
Awesome. Yeah, brownies.
And
chocolate orange brownies, weren't they?
Porky Bap and all that
caramel
kind of
brownies.
Stuff. And, it's absolutely superb. So get yourself along to the British Tech Bash. You can buy your tickets now, which gives a heads up that it's coming along, or waits a bit closer. Mm-hmm. But get yourself a hotel room. The Bradford Arms over the road is a travel lodge, and that's a B36 area of Birmingham. And it's right opposite the Kismet, so you can stumble home drunk from there after we've done the curry on the Friday night. And then also it's only a short taxi journey, not even £5, down to the bash for the following day. And we're doing the Here's What I Know Day on the Sunday, so we've only got 30 spaces for that. They're going fast. We've got 22 of those spaces already gone, so we've only got 8 left. So if you want one, then come on that, and you'll hear some of us say what we know about something. I can't
Have you got Greeny doing that?
I'm not saying any word, but Greeny may do one, but I think you'll find that Greeny's is going to be actually probably one of the better ones, because he's active, isn't he? Right, have we got a cool thing? Start us off, Alan H.
I wanted to sneak in two. Is that all right?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, one is, I thought that it was kind of a glitch or a workaround, but this week Microsoft is officially promoting, if you've got an Xbox 360, they've now enabled via the console that you can get the free Xbox Live, Xbox Gold games for Xbox One, and start building up all your licenses ready for when and if you buy an Xbox One. So, I mean, as part of your Xbox Live Gold yearly subscription, you get basically a free Xbox 360 game every 2 weeks and a free Xbox One game every 4 weeks. Before, you could, and you still can, go onto the website and basically claim your licenses via there. But now on Xbox 360, you can also claim the Xbox One one straight from the dashboard, which, you know, just goes and makes things easy. And they're often good games. I mean, the current Xbox One one is Rayman Legends platformer. And at the moment, the Rayman games are fun. The Xbox 360 one is the recent Tomb Raider reboot, full price game. And then second half of March, it's actually BioShock Infinite for Xbox 360.
Really? Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. So, you know, really?
That's pretty good.
And supposedly next month, because it's an anniversary month, they're going to actually give more than 3 games away across the 2 consoles during the month. So, yeah. No, if you haven't been doing it, you know, and you've got Xbox Live Gold, go get your inclusive games, you know, every 2 weeks for 360 and any time during the month for Xbox One. But if you don't have an Xbox One now, just, you know, buy the license for free, and then when you plug in your Xbox One, I had sort of 360 gig worth of Xbox One games from 9 months of build-up just start flowing down me broadband. Wow. So I had a games library straight as soon as I plugged my Xbox One in.
Brilliant.
That's my first tip. The second tip is actually there's a glitch with how you can get Office 365 and it's 1 terabyte or 10 terabyte of OneDrive space for really, really cheap. So if you've got if you've got an Office 365 personal license, like if you bought a piece of hardware, a lot of them come with 1 year of Office 365 personal, or it works for Office 365 University. Or you can go on eBay and there's sellers that will charge you about 25, 30 quid a year for a 1 year of Office 365 personal. You can stack those up, yeah, up to 4 years in the future. And then if you go on the Office 365 website and buy 1 month of the next Office 365's home 5-user account, yeah, and then cancel the renewal, it will upgrade whatever personal time you had. So for one cost of £7.99, which Quidquo will give you cash back on, you can get up to 4 years, up to a 4 year upgrade on your Office 365 subscription.
Oh, right.
Wow.
And I've just posted in the chat room the link to the deal that I posted, and sort of almost 900 people have liked it on Hot UK Deals, and it's still working. Wow. It's been a couple of weeks, but people have still been getting that good. And yeah, you know, it's just, it basically just is a glitch in that whatever credit you have before you do this one-time, one-month Office home purchase goes and upgrades your Office 365 for the rest of that period. So that can save you a lot of money. And at the moment, that's Office 365 well comes with 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage. But there's a link that if you send a email, if you send a submit a form to Microsoft, within 1 week they'll send you back and upgrade you to 10 terabytes of online storage for the same price. Oh,
10 terabytes is incredible.
I have 10 terabytes, and by the end of this year, all OneDrive 365s will be upgraded to unlimited. So 10 terabytes will be small. But yeah, I have no idea what I'm going to fill the 10 terabytes of my OneDrive with. No.
Just
that's my biggest problem.
Brilliant, mate. Good pick. There's some great stuff coming out from Microsoft at the moment, you've got to say. Unbelievable. They're really trying. Well done, Sachin. Superb. Sachin Nutella. Fine bloke. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, mate?
All right. Buried under the Lego catalog, of course. Whoops. I have a book this time. I'm going old school. So this is a book called The End of the World, and it's from my favorite animator, Don Hertzfeldt. And Don has some amazing award-winning videos or movies that he's made, and they're all animated. So what he did was he wrote this book, and the art that's in here, it's the same style that he has in his movies that he makes. Mm. And it's just this story about the end of the world. Just, you know, his typical amazing artwork put together with his amazing storytelling skills in one nice hardbound volume. So I was very pleased when mine showed up. I ordered it, and then we started having all these blizzards. So it was just delayed over and over. But it finally arrived. And totally worth the $30 that I paid for it. Beautiful book, beautiful Jeez. Artwork, and a typical, just like really interesting, touching and weird Don Hertzfeldt story all mixed together. And as a book, not a movie.
Excellent, mate. Good stuff. Thank you very much. Kelly's gone. Why would you just click to us? Righty, where are you, mate? What have you got for us?
Well, I've been doing some reviews, obviously, in the last few weeks, and to say wearables, and the last one I tried with this, which was the Jawbone app. The most frustrating thing about it is you have to kind of pull this off and plug in the headphone jack of your iPhone to get it all uploaded. But with my Nokia 735 that I got the other month, I've been wearing this, which is the Fitbit Flex, and it's so much better. and don't tell my wife because she bought the Jawbone for me. But what it does is obviously it wireless syncs to your iPhone and it counts your steps during the day. But you can, you tap it, I don't know if you can see it on there, but it tells you how far into your day you've done. And it already tells me there, I've done 10,000 steps at least of my day. But it's one of the most elegant, you know, with the Apple Watch coming out. I'm not really interested in the watch particularly. I just want the kind of health and fitness kind of side of it. But it just really works really well. It just, you've got app for Android and iOS and all that sort of thing. And it just works really, really well. I don't need to tell the time because I'm my phone to do that. But the health kind of thing, and if you get any of the new Lumia phones, I think the 735, there's a couple of others, you can download the Fitbit gift app and they send you one of these free. And it said, when I downloaded the app, it said it'll be there in 4 weeks. It was there in 4 days. Absolutely amazing. So if you're thinking about buying a Windows phone, look for the one with the free Fitbit app. They're like £80 and they give it to you for nothing.
Well, that's really cool.
Excellent. No, good pick. Okay. Looks very stylish as well as. So.
Yeah, it's a lot because that was a bit chunky, as you can see there. That is, yeah, they're quite a nice little thing to have on. So,
excellent.
Got shed a few pounds for the bash.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. And Lee, what have you got?
Well, I've actually changed my mind on my pick. I was going to be doing an application called Slack because I've been using Slack for the last couple of weeks while I've been doing some work for Productivityist, and it's an awesome collaboration app and really, really good. But you know me in my productivity, I've found a productivity app today which just kicks the absolute shit out of any other productivity app I've ever used. It's called Habit RPG. And essentially what it is it's a way of being able to get you set up and achieve your goals and your habits.
Lee?
Sorry,
mate, you've got really horribly crackly audio. Could we ask you to restart your mic and we'll come back to you and I'll just cover something else while you do that.
Yeah, go for it. Okay.
Just unplug and plug it back in again and get us sorted on that. I wanted to cover just quickly the London Mac User Group is having an event because Monday, unless you've been on Mars, Apple are having a keynote, and of course, as is traditional, we'll be doing a live coverage as well as, and we'll be hopefully dialing into London Mac User Group down in Tiger in the Haymarket in London. But the London Mac User Group is having an event. It starts at 5 p.m. on Monday night. So whatever you do, get your ass over there if you're anywhere near London. And check it out. Last time there was a couple of hundred people turned up. I think you were at the last one, weren't you, Lee? And it was really, really busy. So it was superb. So yeah, get yourself down to the Haymarket in London to Tiger Nightclub, and the London Mac User Group has got an entire room with a big live feed. You'll see the whole keynote. There'll be loads of interaction, and here we go. The raffle prize is an Apple Watch.
Nice.
But you got to be there. You can't remotely buy your raffle ticket, unfortunately. You got to be there. So get your ass down to the Haymarket in London to the Tiger Nightclub and get yourself an Apple Watch raffle ticket.
Wow.
Yeah. Be awesome. Right, Lee.
Is that better?
Much better.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you got some impedance building.
Can you hear me now?
USB socket.
Awesome. Okay, right. My pick this week is going to be a productivity app called Habit RPG. And essentially what it is it's a way of being able to get you to set up sort of daily habits that you want to be able to follow and achieve. But it gamifies it. So what you've got is you've got a character, and every time you achieve one of your habits, so for example, I've got get up at 5 a.m, meditate at least once a day, do 30 minutes productivity reading, write 1,000 words a day, etc. Every time I achieve one of those goals, my character gains sort of experience points and levels up, and you're able to go on quests and, you know, fill up your inventory with different weapons, etc., to be able to defeat bosses. You can join parties, etc., and it's a proper RPG game, but it's based on any sort of habits and activities that you want to achieve. So it sort of gamifies your aims and intentions, and it's absolutely fantastic. I love it. I've just started up my own party. I've got four people in my party. if I don't get up at 5 o'clock tomorrow, then, you know, one of their characters is going to lose sort of points, and I don't want to do that. So it's a really good incentive for being able to get you to get you to achieve your goals. It's, you can do it on the web interface if you don't want to have an app for your phone, but it is available on iOS, Android and Windows Phone, and it's completely free and well worth a look.
Excellent, mate. Good stuff. Thank you very much. Right. The big show will be back next week as normal. I think we're moving to... Is that next week? No, it's the week after we're moving to Friday. 20th, we're going to be on a Friday. Next week, we're going to be on a Thursday as normal. So get yourself into the chat room and have a load of fun. And we'll try and stream live. But the good news is live stream are going to get told to shove it up their arse, because we're going to go with UK2, who are giving us a dedicated server for the process. So, and keep an eye out next week, because I think you will find a brand new website for BTN, which will have some rather cool stuff on it. Thanks to Len Peralta, who's drawn. Sorry, my phone's been going off like mad.
You're a popular man.
Someone's expecting a video about 4 hours ago. No, Len Peralta's drawn some wonderful stuff for us, so that'll be on the new website when it goes up, and it is really, 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 really special. So we'll enjoy that. Where can we get a hold of you chaps, Alan?
Yeah, you can find me on the Twitters at Digital Amoeba.
Excellent.
All one word.
And 21 years UK2 customer.
Yeah.
Where are you, Jeffrey?
I'm heading out over at macobserver.com, and on Twitter, I'm jgamut, and same thing on Instagram, I believe, and all kinds of podcasts all over everywhere, plus Fresh Brewed Tales, where I write about the interesting things I see at coffee shops, and hey, I'm actually going to be doing a couple public appearances coming up in May. Yeah, in May, I'm going to be at the ACES conference in New Orleans, and I'll be giving one of the keynote presentations there. And then a couple days after that, I'll be at Denver Comic Con, where I'll be interviewing celebrities on one of the big stages. So I'll be out and about. Come find me.
Oh, excellent. So Comic Con. So who are the celebrities?
Can't say yet who I'm interviewing.
Oh.
But I'll be doing a couple a day, looks like.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Will Wheaton's got to be in there, surely.
I don't know if Will is actually going to be there this year. He was there, I think, last year. I'm not sure if he's able to get back again this year.
No, I just thought I could trick you there into saying, yeah, Will's going to be there.
Well, you know, good try.
Jeff is not easily tricked.
Not easily, no. He's an absolute demon. Where are you, Righty?
You find me in the Rocky Mountains waiting for Jeffrey Garrett to come and join me.
With his vibrator.
I'll be on Twitter at Paulhams and forever and ever for a day at BritsetNetwork.com.
All right, mate. You got to go now because we've got your likeness. It's like we own your soul now.
No, that's it. I've lost it, haven't I?
If you haven't seen it, one of the pictures we've got of Righty is absolutely Righty. It is just...
Love it. Love it a lot.
Pure Righty.
It's Righty. Pure Righty. There we go. Might shove it up on the feed at the end. And where are you, Mr. Garrett?
I am on the Twitters at Solium Says. You can find me on my blog at soliumsays.com. You can find me blogging and reviewing productivity apps at productivityist.com. And you'll see me at Elmark on Monday.
And there's a vicious rumour kicking around that you're doing a podcast for us.
There is indeed. I've got my first dummy run. It's going to be happening next Thursday with a new sort of co-host that's going to be introduced to the network, and then hopefully there's going to be one published in a couple of weeks.
And isn't
schedule dependent?
Isn't your young lady daughter doing one for us?
I'm hoping so. It's certainly in the plan. We've been talking about that this week.
She had an abortive recording attempt last week, I think, I gather.
Yeah. Yes, God bless her. She's got so much on, but she's quite desperate to do that.
Well, Alyssa's started already last week, so he's keen to join in with her if she wants to.
Well, do you know what? Last week's one with Ellis was such a like a refreshing sort of thing to listen to, and it just mixes things up a little bit, doesn't it? Which is good. I think having some youngsters on is a fantastic idea.
I've had no end of emails this week saying "piss off, you old wanker."
That's no way to raise your son. Come on, what's he doing that for?
My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Old Wanker on Twitter. No, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. Ewan Rankin. And we'll be back next week. See you on Thursday for Big Show. Thank you so much for listening.